Wanneer al about Detroit?
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Lubabalo, I can see you're speaking, but you are muted.
Can you hear me now?
Lubabalo?
Yes, sir. Am I not audible still?
Yeah, you're audible now.
Oh, okay. I wanted to reply on behalf of Honorable Tutoi. He's still attending another meeting.
Oh,
but he has been already. Yes, as soon as that meeting is done, he will focus in our meeting. That's what he said to me.
I think it's the WIPS forum.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
How much time is left? 7 minutes.
That's correct.
Presenters here, Treasury and Social Development.
Not yet, Chair, not yet, but I've just accepted Mr. Fakude, PLO of Honorable Minister Zulu. I spoke with him earlier on. I was still expecting him to give me the name. Maybe I'll speak with him through this platform now to get the name of the presenter. Mr. Fakude?
My name is Tero Tajamoni.
How are you, sir?
Members. Very well, thanks. Very well.
Good, good, thanks. Do you have the name of the presenter for me?
I think it will be the ADG, Mr. Linton Mkuno.
Okay.
But they are just consulting, but yeah, I think it will be him.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
He said he's expecting someone to join.
Yes, sir. Listen, Mr. Mkuna, I think Mr. Mkuna is the acting director general, but the team has not joined yet. So the reason why I spoke with him, I wanted the name of the person that I'm going to make a co-host for that particular person to run.
Okay.
Yes. So it was an administrative. They are not here yet, but I'm expecting Okhale and Mr. Delay to the leaders of the delegations, of Treasury delegations.
We don't have much time. We're left with
5 minutes. Like I'm sure they will join any time from now, Chairperson.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Estelle, good morning.
Good morning, Chairperson. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you? Long time not talking to you.
Yes, long time.
Yolanda, good morning. Is she here? Good morning, Honorable Ryder.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, colleagues, everyone else online.
Is this a special design? Because it's got two logos, Parliament and Gauteng. Yeah.
Well, isn't that the two hats that we're wearing, Chair? Or two of the hats that we're wearing? I should put a Val logo on there as well. Your party logo, perhaps you can have a few others. But no, as you know, proudly Gauteng.
Is it legal? Is it allowed?
Well, that's my place. I'm not sure that that's legal either, but
the face is Lincoln in the building and Parliament. I'm not sure about that one. Curiosity.
I thought it was pretty cool. So yeah.
No, it's fine. How are you doing? Are you fine?
No, it's good. Lingers. It continues to linger, but we're getting there. Thank you.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm getting there as well.
Good.
I'm cymatic. The house is here. Hey, you can't close the windows properly. There's dust that comes in and just mess up with my sinuses.
Yeah, it's that time of the year, unfortunately.
Yeah. Mr. Jomo? It's not here yet. Yolanda, I see you're here. How are you? Yolanda?
I'm well, thank you.
I'm good, thank you.
Yeah.
Much. Long time not seeing you.
Yes.
Oh, we must go back to Parliament. Our committee must get a permanent committee room.
It would be nice to meet us again, yes.
Yes. Is Mr. Lomo not yet on the platform? Honorable Mlesane, how are you?
Morning, Chairperson. I'm good, and how are you?
I'm good, my leader. I'm good.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Morning, Chair.
Morning.
Sir, I just wanted to bring to your attention that I have just accepted Honorable Minister Zulu.
Oh, okay. Honorable Minister, how are you? Good morning, Honorable Minister.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. Thank
morning.
You. I'm fine. Thank you very much. I'm just in motion at the moment.
I can imagine and I can hear that. Thank you for connecting. You're welcome. We must not waste your time because we know it's that day of the week.
This meeting is being recorded.
Honorable Karim, welcome as well. I think, honorable members, we can start. Lubabalo, the agenda.
It's 9 hours.
So that we don't delay the members. I mean, okay. A very good morning to all the members of the committee. Once more, we know on Wednesdays we deal with appropriations. I want to take this opportunity to welcome and appreciate the presence of the Minister, Honorable Minister Lindiwe Zulu, in the platform. We have invited her to be part of our meeting, even though we know that today is a cabinet day, but also there's a cabinet lekgotla. Hence, she's, traveling to the venue. We also welcome Team Treasury under the leadership of Okhalele Singh. I think you are the one who's leading the team from Treasury. Honorable members, you are all welcome. And please feel free to participate. We know the house rules. Some of the members are still going to join us as we go on, and all interested parties on the platform, you are all welcome. Can you go to item number 2, apologies, Lubabalo?
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, honorable members. Am I audible, Chair?
Yes, you are.
Oh, thank you so much, Chairperson. Thank you so much, Chair. Chairperson, we have a few apologies. Firstly, let me start with the apology of the Honourable Minister. As you have indicated, Honourable Minister is supposed to be attending a cabinet lekgotla. So we are very lucky that she has joined us so far. The second apology that we received is from the Deputy Minister, Honourable Bokopane Zulu. The Honourable Minister, I believe she is in Northwest, leading an awareness campaign on alcohol fetal syndrome. With respect to committee members, Chair, I received an apology from Honourable Mamaragane. I think by now she's at the airport en route to Cape Town, so she might not be able to fully participate in the meeting. Those are the few apologies that I received, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members and Mr. Notata, for the apologies. We're noting the apologies as presented. I think, with your permission, honourable members, can we accommodate the minister before she attends the lekgotla and allow her to speak? So that we can give her space and allow you to attend to the commitment. We really appreciate your presence, Honourable Minister. There's been a complaint from the Appropriations Committee members that we hardly get members, but as and when ministers avail themselves to be part of our committee, we really appreciate that. You are welcome, and I hand over to you. Honourable Minister Zulu.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson, and may I just indicate that I'm almost at the venue where I'm supposed to be. I just arrived in Cape Town.
Okay.
Because we, as you indicated, and we had the cabinet lekgotla, so I have to also join the portfolio committee. So I will only be in this meeting for about 30 minutes and then go join the portfolio committee. And today we answering questions in the house. But may I also indicate that the department and myself, we always attend to your meetings because of the appreciation and understanding of the role of the select committee. I wish to thank you. I'm here with my team, but also indicate that the DG, I'm not sure whether, I think the DG is gonna be on this side, not at the portfolio committee. I think that was our agreement, if I recall. Our DG, my DG is going to be on this side. Certainly, if you can just give me 2 seconds to,
okay.
So that the network doesn't disappoint. I'm just running to a better space.
So Treasurer O'Khaleleseng, get ready. After the minister, I'm going to allow you to make your presentation, which I believe is going to be not long, according to the slides.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we'll get ready.
Okay.
Morning.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As I indicated earlier on, I will be here. I'll make my opening remarks and then give to the department, and I think my acting DG should be here. I'm taking a breather. I was running. Thank you. Honorable Chairperson, Dikeledi Mahlangu, thank you very much. Members of the Select Committee on Appropriations, And of course, our Honorable Deputy Minister in absentia, as indicated in the apology, Acting Director General of Social Development, Mr. Linton Mutunu, Executive Officer of the South African Social Security Agency, popularly known as SASSA, Ms. Dotimemela Kambula, Acting Chief Executive Officer of the National Development Agency, Mr. Bongani Magongo, senior managers and officials of the Department of Social Development and its entities, and fellow South Africans, and thank you very much. I thank you for inviting me and the Department of Social Development in our portfolio to present this honorable committee, to this honorable committee, the Early Childhood Development Grant expenditure during the fourth quarter of 2021-2022 financial year. May I, from the onset, Honorable Chair and members, indicate that the Minister of Basic Education and myself, as well as our departments, have been working very well in the process of ensuring that early childhood development is smoothly transferred back to the Department of Basic Education. Having said that, Chairperson, please allow me to premise this presentation on subsection 28.2 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, where provision is made that, and I quote, a child's best interests are of paramount importance in every matter concerning the child. This, Chairperson, is what drives us as a Department of Social Development, but also as government in general, in ensuring that we create a conducive environment for our children so that our children would live a much, much better life and a better future than some of us did. During the 2021-22 financial year, the total of 1.235 billion was allocated towards the ECD conditional grant. In accordance with the approved payment schedules, these funds were transferred to each and every one of the 9 provinces. And I'm hoping, Chairperson, that the provincial MECs are also on the platform. If not, maybe the departments are on the platform, because when all is said and done, they are the ones that have to take the responsibility when it comes to these grants. The conditional grant was aimed at, one, increasing the coverage of children, particularly poor children who are accessing early childhood development services through the ECD subsidy. Two, assisting to improve the conditionally registered ECDs facilities to fulfill the basic requirements for them to be fully registered. And three, contributing to the department's efforts to enable the recovery of ECD sector following the hardship that accompanied the advent of COVID-19. Four, provinces have been encountering challenges, and I think this is where the department is going to further elaborate, in spending the funds as expected, and I will not take time doing that because that's their responsibility to do that. And the department has continuously been availing its support towards ensuring that within the provisions of the law, the sector benefits from the identified 3 funded streams. Likewise, we cannot emphasize enough the need to pay the money to the right people. We take our duty to protect public funds very seriously. And Honorable Chair and members, most of us and yourselves, you also know the challenges that we always find with ECDs, where sometimes it's an ECD is just a center where somebody who has got passion, who likes children, would keep the children, but unfortunately only to find that they are not properly registered. They don't even have the prerequisite of ensuring that the children are there and they are properly stimulated. The Honorable Chairperson and members may recall that earlier this year, on 1st April, I officially migrated the ECD function to the Honorable Minister of Basic Education, the Honorable NG Mutsekga. And as I indicated earlier on, once the political decision was made, we then made sure that that is followed by the implementation of that political decision. Having migrated the basic education, as a matter of fact, this function continues to receive reinforcements and support from social development, because we also believe that the issue of children and that of ECDs is not only just going to be an issue for the Department of Basic Education. All of us in our different ways have to continue contributing towards ensuring that a conducive environment is created, but also as a Department of Social Development, having been responsible, we will also continue to be supportive. And besides, we still are responsible for children as according to the Children's Act. We continue to work together with the basic education on the finalization of few transitional and outstanding matters. The presentation will provide the relevant details in this respect. Under basic education, ECD forms part of one of the same value chain where from other basic education interventions are being designed, resourced, and implemented. We assure the honorable members and fellow South Africans, in particular that children themselves, parents and caregivers, that henceforth, children beneficial partnership will be strengthened with the best interest of the child in mind. Doing so will emphatically and rightfully articulate the long-term value of the ECD sector in relation to our national economic reconstruction, recovery, sustained growth, and children's future economic productivity. Because the children we're talking about today are the children we want to see grown up being the doctors, the teachers, the scientists, the parliamentarians, hopefully. So we need to make sure that we create a conducive environment for them today. We are committed to children, parents, and ECD practitioners who experience service continuity and improvement. Honorable Chairperson and members, please receive the briefing by the Department of Social Development on Early Childhood Development Grant fourth quarter expenditure for 2021-2022. Financial year for your due consideration, and I would hand over to you, Chairperson, but indicate that the DG is online. He will be leading the presentation. Thank you very much and have a good day.
Thank you so much, Honorable Minister, and thanks for the briefing. I think it has enriched our thinking and our take in as far as the process of migrating ECD to Department of Basic Education. I think politically we understand what is happening as of now. We will hear in terms of the presentation from the acting DG. We really appreciate your presence and the compromise that you have made to can juggle between amongst actually the commitment, because you still have to go to Portfolio Committee on Social Development. Wishing you the best of all for the day. Thank you so much, Minister.
Thank you, Chair.
Can be excused. Thank you. We really appreciate your presence and your presentation. I think it's Mr. Bilay who's going to make a presentation from Treasury before we take the acting DG from Social Development.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members and Honorable Minister. Indeed, Emmanuel will make the short presentation. Thank you. Honorable Chair.
Okay, I didn't see it. My apologies.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Pinay, over to you.
Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, MECs of Provincial Departments, and members of the committee. I just want to confirm, Chair, can you see my presentation?
Yes, we can see it, but
is it possible
to make it on slide four?
Okay.
And thank you for reminding me. I know that we requested the minister to extend the invitation to the MECs of social development in the provinces. I don't know how many
have made it, but we know that today, even in the provinces, they have cabinet meetings. But if we have MECs on the platform, you are welcomed. We appreciate your presence. If you were able to be released to be part of this meeting, we will identify and give special welcome to you. Lubabalo will be checking, and Estelle will be checking who are the MECs on the platform, if any. Over to you, Mr. Pillay.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So, as you indicated earlier, our presentation is relatively short. We're just focusing on the 21-22 financial year, not the current year, as the Minister clearly explained the function shift to the Department of Basic Education. And also, I suppose, on the first slide as well, the Minister did outline clearly what the purpose and the goal is of the grant and also the ECD function and all the work that goes towards that. So the goal, just to emphasize again, is to increase the quality ECD services to poor children. The grant structure itself is made up of two main components, and that's the infrastructure component and the subsidy component. So there is a small portion that's allocated towards administration of the grant as well. For the past two financial years, we had a sort of temporary measure, which is called the Presidential Employment Initiative, that did allocate funds towards the grant to protect against any unemployment risk during the COVID period. So just in terms of the infrastructure component, we're looking at the maintenance of the ECD centers to ensure that they are up to the appropriate standards that's conducive for the children to learn, and also in terms of safety and in terms of the registration of the center as well. So, and a new sort of subcomponent was added there, that was the construction of low-cost ECD centers as well. The main component of the grant is the subsidy component, which provides for subsidies for the learners in the centers, and that's all the sort of indicators we have under that component. But just to say that there's three subsidy elements to it. One is the full subsidy, the other one is a top-up to the equitable share, and the third one is non-centre-based. But I'll get to that on the slide when I look at the performance information there. As we indicated, that's the split. So you can see the majority of the grant goes towards subsidy. A small amount goes towards administration. And the 23%, the Presidential Employment Initiative, is not a temporary feature of the grant. It was just there for the past two financial years. And there hasn't been any allocation in the current, in the future, but we'll just give you some information on that in terms of the performance of that element of the grant. So spending for the entire 21-22 financial year, I'm going to give you a bit more detail in the next slide, but just a graphical representation in terms of how provinces performed. You'll see in terms of what was allocated and what was spent, all provinces with the exception of Western Cape underspent the allocation. We had some that underspent quite significantly, if you look at Northwest, KZN and Gauteng, for example, and then some not so much, for example, in Mpumalanga. But there has been widespread underspending across most provinces. The key reasons for the underspending was the subsidy component. The subsidy component was to a lesser extent, but mostly it was on the Presidential Employment Initiative. Most provinces did underspend on this. I'll go to the next slide, give you details in terms of what the outcome was of the 21-22 financial year. So the underspending, 416 million was underspent on the grant. It's quite a significant portion. It's almost 25% of the total allocation there. Just to indicate that of that budget of 1.6 billion rand, it includes rollovers of around just over 350 million rand that came from the previous financial year. So we're looking at rollovers from the 2021 financial year that came through. And then we added to the current financial year 178 million rand for the Presidential Employment Initiative as well. And that's where we see most of that expenditure being realized there. So of the 416 million that was underspent at the end of the financial year, we ran the rollover process, which we coordinate with provincial treasuries. And we run the process according to the Division of Revenue Act and Treasury regulations. There are various rules in terms of what can be rolled over and what can't. And the criteria is clearly set out in these two pieces of legislation. So just as an example, if you go to the first province, Eastern Cape, of the underspending of 60 million rand, we approve rollovers of 23. And 36 million rand will have to be surrendered back to the National Revenue Fund. Now, just to indicate, these are provisional numbers. So we haven't based it on what a final audit outcome is. So you might see some change in terms of underspending, and obviously that will impact the amount that needs to be surrendered back to the National Revenue Fund. But from prior experience, we don't expect any material change in the numbers. So some of the reasons for the rollovers not being approved, one is that the rollovers from previous financial years were not utilized. So in terms of the rollover regulations, you can't roll over funds for the same project or invoices or for 2 years, but you can do it for 1 year. And if the department, the provincial department, had funds that were rolled over from the previous financial year and not spent, then you can't roll over it for the second time. So that will automatically be surrendered back to the National Revenue Fund. And the other reason is that the funds that were underspent at the end of the financial year were not committed. So in the case of the Presidential Employment Initiative grant or allocation, requirements was that for the funds to be committed, you needed to verify the beneficiaries, and this was done by the National Department of Social Development. But the National Department, as we have engaged with them, had many issues in terms of verifying beneficiaries. So the information was not readily available and could not be confirmed with the Department of Home Affairs, for example. The department may provide more detail on that, but that's the two key reasons why the total underspending was not rolled over in the full amount. So we're expecting the region of 214 million to be surrendered back to the National Revenue Fund after the audit has been concluded. Yes. And as I said, it's the bulk of it is the Presidential Employment Initiative, but to a lesser extent, the subsidies.
Oh, you got the muffin?
Yes.
Hey, you can you spoil it?
Oh, no. Hello. Can you mute your mic, please? Can you mute your mic? Thank you. I'm sorry about that, Mr. Pillay.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So just some performance indicators. As I indicated earlier, there's two main components, the subsidy component and the infrastructure, the infrastructure component. So the subsidy component has three elements to it. One is where the department provides a full subsidy, and that's 17 rand per day per child for 264 days. The second one is the top up to equitable share. So this is where the province is paying a certain portion, but it's not up to that level. So the difference is paid by the provincial department. That's top up to equitable share. And the third one is subsidies towards non-center-based ECDs. So if you look at the first one on the top left corner, you'll see most provinces did manage to meet their targets. KZN, for example, exceeded their targets by about 10,000. And then we also Northern Cape as well did manage to exceed targets there. So from an underperformance perspective, we're just looking at Western Cape and Western Cape and Northwest and Malanga in terms of that component. they're not much in terms of the compliance. Generally, they did comply well. But as I indicated, some of the underperformance did come on this component. So, and the underspending as well. So, that could be linked to that. In terms of the other two, the top up to equitable share and the non-center base, you'll see that it's not all provinces that are affected by this. So, for example, KZN and is not affected by the top up to equitable share and Free State. Over here as well, there has been, in terms of what provinces targeted and what they actually achieved, there has been some underperformance. Gauteng is quite notable. Western Cape again has been some underperformance there, around 15,000 compared to the target of 60. But if you look at the non-center base, which is only four provinces, and it's not that significant except for Western Cape. So Western Cape has a larger contingent or cohort in terms of this, and they did manage to exceed the target there. So those are the subsidy components. If we go over to the maintenance components, now there was a new element added to this, and that was the construction of low-cost ECD centers. Now that doesn't make too much of an impact, and if you look across provinces, not many did achieve on this. So we focused mostly on the maintenance component and looked at what provinces targeted in terms of their centers to maintain and get them up to the standards for registration in terms of safety and health and safety standards and registration. And we looked at across provinces. You'll see that some provinces did achieve their targets. Eastern Cape, Limpopo and Western Cape, for example, did achieve their targets, but the other five did not. There has been quite significant underperformance if you look at KZN, for example, and Free State as well. Just to note, Chair, that for Northern Cape, although the actual target, the actual is 9, the target is 9 and actually 8. We did receive an amended report from the department after the presentation was sent. So we'll have to do an adjustment to that. The actual number for that is 4. So Northern Cape actually went below 50% in terms of their targets over there. So these are the main non-performance indicators for the grant in terms of the grant objectives. So as we indicated, the sort of temporary allocation, the Presidential Employment Initiative was not completed in terms of the beneficiary verifications. So that was the key reason for a lot of the funds not being spent on this. And although it was a key initiative by the President in terms of ensuring that anyone at risk in terms of COVID, in terms of employment was protected, it's a bit concerning that it was not able to be fully utilized. But as indicated, it was a bit difficult for the Department of Social Development to verify its beneficiaries in time, and that was the main cause of it. And we're looking at funds from the previous financial year that were not spent as well, and that could not be rolled over, so that funds were automatically lost to the National Revenue Fund. Maintenance component, there were delays in procurement, and they had implementing agents that were not performing. So I know one of the agents was the Independent Development Trust, that was the implementing agent that did not perform according to what the time frames were. And in terms of the construction of new centers, there were some delays in terms of permission to occupy and some delays with tribal authorities, for example, in Eastern Cape, where the departments were not able to get the land in time to construct those things, those centers. The other one is the late submission of claims by non-profit organizations or the centers themselves, causing delays in transfers. And this, as I indicated earlier, one of the sort of underperformance areas was the subsidy component, and this obviously contributed to that because the department can't pay these centers unless the claims are submitted and verified by the department. So as the minister and indicated, and all of us are aware, the function has shifted to the Department of Basic Education. So we were not, in terms of recommendations, because the function has moved, so it won't be a recommendation for the Department of Social Development. But just for noting for the Department of Basic Education, which we will be focusing on, and perhaps if the committee deems it necessary that they do report after the first quarter or during the financial year, that these are the things that we might take into consideration. So the Department of Social Development, in terms of the infrastructure, has not, in terms of their departments, don't have well-developed infrastructure units as compared to the Department of Basic Education. So the Department of Basic Education has units that are well capacitated in terms of built environment specialists, engineers, planners, and those sort of things, those sort of areas. So they should, from our perspective, be better positioned in terms of delivering on maintenance and in construction of new centres. But we'll have to keep a check on that to ensure that the ECD centres are also prioritised when it comes to the centre, and not just schools and sanitation and so on. The other thing that, in terms of the challenges we picked up, and that was the delays with the claims. So maybe we'll have to check with the Department of Basic Education that these centres are provided with training to capacitate the staff to ensure that the claim forms that they submit are submitted and are verified, and that they're submitted with minimal errors, so that there's no delays in terms of transfer, and that obviously will relate in underspending. So that is the two major things that we will need to look at and perhaps consider with the Department of Basic Education. The Presidential Employment Initiative, as I indicated, is not a permanent feature of the grant, but there were issues with the verification. And we're not too clear in terms of whether that has been sorted out fully. But if it's part of the grant in the new financial in the next year or the adjustments or whenever, we're not sure if it will be part. But that's just another area to consider in terms of the verifications and any issues there that need to be ironed out. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pillay. When we started, I could not send my special appreciation and welcome to the members of the portfolio committees from the provinces. I see Honorable Bandile and the other members from Gauteng. I don't know if there are others from other provinces, and if you're here, those whom I have not seen, you're also welcome. We appreciate your cooperation, and your participation will be very much appreciated. Thank you so much for being here. And then Mr. Pillay, thank you for the presentation. Can we remove this presentation of National Treasury and put that of Social Development and the DG? Slide form, please. FTDG, can you open your video, please? Acting DG from Social Development. The minister has left the delegation in your hands. Am I audible, honorable members? I don't
you are me, Chair. You certainly are.
I don't get a response from the acting DG. I don't know if he's still on the platform or has been cut off.
Imagine how the rest of South Africa feels.
Good morning. Good morning. Can you open your video, Acting DG?
Chairperson, good morning.
Thank you. Good morning to members
and good morning to minister and you know other colleagues.
We can't see you. We can't see you, madam. And the I see you have a team there that is assisting you. Lebabalo, can you help with the slide form? We can see your side, not your face or your front. That is why it's always good that you connect earlier so that Shelly and them can help you with the framing. Yo. Ke matsapa me.
I'm trying to
Babalo, can you do the slide while they're struggling? Guys, the video or the camera is on the side. We can see the person who helps you, but we can't see you. And we can see his back, not you. I think Vishnu will not be happy with this. Okay, let's continue. Lubabalo, you are unable to do the slide.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm standing on for DJ.
Another meeting, the PC meeting. She thought.
Okay, can you introduce yourself as you stand in for the acting DG? Lubabalo?
My name is Isabella Sekawana. I'm the acting DDG for welfare services. I'm with the team here from finance, Anita Samad. I'm with Rogers from the office of the DG. I'm with Pumzile from infrastructure. They will also be having an acting CFO.
Okay. Yeah, your team is telling you, madam, because I don't know if they can see you on your screen. How you look, or they can see me, or Honorable Ryder.
We can see you, Chairperson.
Yeah, I'm saying to her, can she see me how I look? Because it looks like she's not facing the camera.
Not everyone can be as beautiful as you, though, Chair. So, yeah.
I see they're showing her the camera.
Chairperson, you're not an IT specialist. How come you concluded that? Why are you showing off, Chairperson, with due respect?
I learned from the best, from you and this. Kelly's doing a good work on us. And Lubabalo, they did a good work. Okay, can you continue? But this is the picture that we are showing South Africa, which is not good.
We're seeing your face, Jefferson. How can it not be good?
Their face. Do you see?
No, your face. Your face.
No,
as you put it. South Africa, implying that every citizen in South Africa is watching us right now.
I'm talking about social development team, the presenter. She's struggling to...
No, I understand.
Yeah, but maybe let's continue because this is going to eat on our time. Hence, we always encourage the presenters to connect in time. and Shelley Omado, they were going to help them with the funding. Hello. Can you continue, madam?
The presentation that I'm going to make, a majority of it, you know, I think Emmanuel has touched on it. I'll just go through over the slides, you know. And the purpose is the same, to ensure that we are briefing this committee on the performance that you have made with regard to the conditional grant on early childhood development, but also Minister has also touched on the issue of the status of migration, which I won't touch on it because she has already said it. And slide number three is about the context. I think Emmanuel, you know, touched on it to say that when we implemented this grant, we wanted to ensure that we implement the National Integrated ECD policy that was approved by Cabinet in 2015, where we wanted to reach, you know, to quite majority of children in the country. Actually, all the children in the country must access early childhood development. Hence, we had to come up with this conditional grant. So what do we mean by access? It's about quality. Hence, when we look at the conditional grant, it touches on increasing coverage. It also touches on improving, you know, the infrastructure within the ECD sector, because children need to be cared for in a safe environment, you know, that is well suitable for them to be nourished. But also we know about the impact of COVID-19, you know, to the ECD sector, and therefore a relief was given to the sector to ensure that they are able, you know, to cope with the hardships that they have gone through. Now, when we look at the subsidy itself, it has got three components. The first component is about subsidy, and the second one is about ECD maintenance of infrastructure, and the third one is about administration. When we come to subsidy, it has got the element of, you know, ECD stimulus fund. When coming to implementation of this conditional grant, there are conditions that are attached, you know, to the implementation. And the first one under subsidy, it targeted all registered early childhood development entities that were fully funded from the equitable set, but also those that are not funded. And also it looked at ensuring that, you know, there was provinces were not implementing the subsidy uniformly. There were those that were under 17 rand per child per day, and we had to ensure that there is parity in terms of the money, that the value of the subsidy to all children, and therefore, you know, allocation was made in this respect. You will see as we present, there is, you know, that top-up amount that has been made available in that regard. And it is important to indicate that we did not only focus on center-based, but we also looked at non-center-based, because there are those children who are access ECD through non-center-based in those areas where there is no infrastructure at all. So when you are accessing ECD through center-based, it's 17 rand per child per day, and then when you do through non-center-based, it's 6 rand per child per session that is being conducted. Now, in terms of infrastructure, basically, we want to ensure that those ECDs that are conditionally registered are graduated from conditionally to full registration. And therefore, that is why the grant was made available. But however, we are also concerned about those that have not been registered, and there was support money that was available to ensure that we assist those ECDs to reach the minimum nonsense and to allow them to register, because we are mindful of the fact that the children need to thrive in an environment that are conducive for them. And there's also the issue of building of new ECDs, you know, the minor building of ECDs, not the big ECDs, but to build the ECDs that will be conducive for children. Hence, there was a money that was available for construction. Now, when coming to the third part of ECD stimulus, I've spoken about the impact of COVID-19 on the ECD sector, and therefore there are conditions also that were attached. In this regard, we targeted both registered and unregistered ECDs, because we appreciated the fact that even though they were not unregistered, we found those ECDs in most rural areas or in those areas where there is a need for access to early childhood development. Hence, we are saying that we have to really ensure that we also target those that are not registered. And in terms of the types of services, both center and non-center based. And in terms of non-center based, we are talking about the play libraries, the play groups, and the child minors and the mobile libraries. And the conditions that were attached to that, it did not matter whether the ECD was registered as an NPO or not, as long as they were providing ECDs and they met the requirement as a policy that has been developed at that moment to ensure that, you know, we pay this similar to the right people. I'm not going to talk to this. I think Emmanuel has given the allocation. I'll just pass. This is just a breakdown according to provinces. And when coming to issues of compliance to the framework, there are responsibilities at different levels. I'm also not going to touch to them. Those responsibilities were carried out by both a national and the provincial department. Now, when coming to this is about the expenditure. I think Emmanuel also touched on it. This slide gives an indication of the allocations that we received during 2021 and also the rollovers that we did, you know, from the previous 2021, which is the same as what Emmanuel has said. We had a total allocation when we add the rollovers of 1.6 billion that, you know, we had to spend for that financial year. Safe to say that 178 was a new allocation for the stimulus package, which was a top-up of the last allocation for the stimulus package for that was allocated to the ECDs. So if you look at the under expenditure that Emmanuel has spoken about, it's largely on the 178 million that was newly allocated because the ECDs, as Emmanuel has said, could not meet the requirements at that time. We kept on verifying. We gave the support that is needed, but we verified and verified, and they could not meet. And as such, we could not spend this money, but we spent quite a number of a lot of money on the previous rollover that was given to us. Now, in the next slide, I think is what Emmanuel has said. It's just the allocation, breakdown according to provinces. Now, in terms of slide number 14, also it is a summary of the expenditure as at the end of the financial year 2022, March 2022, where we had an allocation of 1.6 billion, and we were able to spend 76% of that allocation. And this is also the breakdown according to provinces. Here, I think Emmanuel has also touched on this slide. I'm not going to go through it. In terms of the performance that according to the infrastructure for that particular financial year. Now, the reasons here we are indicating the reasons as per individual provinces, which have been summed up by Emmanuel, you know, in terms of those five provinces that were not able to perform. Major reasons as indicated by Emmanuel is issues of procurement, is delay in appointment of the agency for implementing agency. But the other reason is acquiring of land, which now we have been able to come up with a plan in terms of how do we bring those, how do we deal with those challenges that we encountered, even though they have moved, you know, to DBE. We have already started working with DBE in terms of that. One of the critical areas that we have been able to deal with is the procurement strategy that we came up with to ensure that, you know, those blockages that we had are well dealt with. You know, this is the reasons, as I've already said, but they can be summed up. Now, the initiatives from the department, as I said earlier, in terms of the infrastructure, we have been able to develop the guidelines and build capacity of provinces in terms of how those guidelines should be implemented, and we supported the provinces throughout, you know, the implementation. We even got extra support from, you know, the partners in the sector. ILIFA and them have assisted so much to provide, you know, advisory services to the provinces. I've spoken about the procurement processes and the low cost. We have, you know, designed the blueprint, you know, in terms of what is it that needs, how the low cost needs to look like, so that we can guide provinces in terms of that. We've been providing oversight. We even went to the provinces on site just to check what is happening. And we also utilize the platforms for quarterly meetings that we are holding to ensure that, you know, we are, the provinces learn from each other, but also we identify the blockages and try to work together to unblock those blockages. This slide is about the beneficiaries of subsidy, who receive, people who receive subsidy. I think it is important to indicate that in terms of subsidy, we have the subsidy of those people who are coming, who are the children who are coming, who are new in the system, but we have those that have been benefiting from the equitable share. And the provinces were not on par. Some were giving 15 rand per child per day, others were already on 17 rand. If you look at provinces like Free State and KZN, there's no allocation under top up because they were already at 17 rand per child. But for those provinces that were not at 17 rand, we had to avail, you know, more funds to ensure that, you know, we bring them, you know, on speed with regard to the 17 rand per child per day, so that all the there is uniformity in terms of the implementation of this the subsidy. Now, it is also important to note that in terms of the subsidy, we've got the center base and the non-center base, and not all provinces were implementing the non-center base. If you look at this presentation, only three provinces, that is Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, and Western Cape, were implementing the non-center base. And hence you can see, you know, there is an elaboration in terms of the more numbers that came. So when we look at the numbers that we have reached, you know, during 2021-22, we have reached over to 258,000 children, and the majority were from the center base. And we are encouraging provinces to ensure that, you know, they give subsidy to more children in non-center based setup. Now, in terms of performance in this area, we reached 86% of the children. And the reasons for reaching 86%, not reaching to all the children, I think Emmanuel has already advanced, you know, the reasons in that regard. We need to ensure that we comply with the laws, and we ensure that, you know, we comply with the PFMA. And as such, that's why those ECDs that were not able, you know, to comply, we were not able to fund them. But instead, we have been able to ensure that we provide support. At the time that I'm talking, the Department of Basic Education is busy going on on-site visits to ensure that those ECDs are being supported, to ensure that, you know, the children that were left out are being able, you know, to access this ECD. Because the reason, the most important reason is that we need to ensure that there is universal access to early childhood development. No children is being left behind. Now, when coming to performance on stimulus package, as Emmanuel has indicated, it's an area where we really underperform, not because of our doing, but because we are administering public funds, and we had to ensure that we pay the money to the right people. Hence, you know, we did a lot of verification, and as we were doing the verification, we could pick up that, you know, there were those that are chance takers. Some of the people who applied are not even rendering ECD services. Secondly, some of the people who applied for the workforce, they could not pass the national the national population register, which means that some were found to be dead, others were found to be on person, just to give examples. So it was very important that we really go through a thorough process to ensure that when we administer public funds, we administer to right people. So this slide indicates that when we started with this funding, we had 474 million that was supposed to be given to the workforce within the ECD sector. And when we started by setting systems in place, because in the first place, this sector is informal. We can understand that initially we've got our mothers who have passion in taking care of the children. So it was started out of passion, and most of them were not registered, but they are still, you know, passionate in terms of doing this job. So we had to ensure that we put systems in place to ensure that, you know, we attract applications and people apply. And once they have applied, we had to do what we call a verification, so that we can be able, you know, to sift and ensure that we are left with people who are most likely to be eligible for this. So when we started, we had 113 workforce that were applied for by 27,000 applications. And then as we did our verification, we ended up with 109 workforce. And that is as a result of the reasons that I have stated below, I have stated earlier. Now, when we closed at the end of 2021, we had only paid over 10,000 workforce, and we remained with 99,458 workforce. And we had to ask for a rollover of 351 million so that we can be able to continue with verification and to pay the people who really qualified. Now, as at the end of this financial year, we had already paid 58,590, amounting to more than 245 million rand. Now, we had to ask for a rollover, which was granted in principle for 48,105, most likely eligible, because these people still have to be verified, you know, and if they qualify, they will be able to access, you know, and they'll be able to be paid. And we asked for an amount of 201 million. Now, we are. What is it that we have done as the Department of Social Development to support the ECDs, but also to support the workforce so that they can be able to get their money? We worked together with the partners in the sector. We had DGMT, Mare, we had Impande, we had ILIFA, we had Nelson Mandela Foundation, we had NGOs themselves, you know, that these ECDs were affiliated to. We had our own, also our local offices that were there to give support, you know, to the sector itself. We built capacity. We also developed guidelines that guided, you know, the provinces or whoever the implementers in terms of how should they implement this stimulus package. We also had, you know, to establish help desk where, you know, ECDs were invited to come so that the local officers can assist them in terms of, you know, filling, completing the information, because some of the major reasons why the applications were denied. The first reason is the incomplete information that was given by ECD sector. Thirdly, the ECD's banking account, most of them were in the names of the ECD operators, which was one of the issues that we were discouraging because we are administering public funds. The other area is that some of the ECDs, even though we verified them against the Bangasali. The Bangasali is a campaign that we did to ensure that we find every ECD, especially the unregistered ECDs, so that we can be able to know them. We could not find them, you know, in the Bangasali database, but we also did the site visit and we could not find those ECDs. So that's the reason that we're having this high numbers of ECDs that we did not find, because we could not really verify that indeed this workforce exists. So it was very important that
I could
mute. Mute, please. Mute.
We also communicated a lot with the ECD sector. There was media release that was done. Minister had a number of briefings that he did with the public, you know, calling the ECDs to come forward to be able to assist that in terms of the completion of information, that or in terms of whatever assistance they could need, you know, for them to be able to qualify. There were SMSs that were sent to those ECDs to tell them that it is important that you avail yourself, you know, so that we can be able to assist you to complete information. We also did reporting and monitoring tools so that we can also promote the standardization across all the provinces. Now, the next step that we are taking, I think Minister has already spoken about the relocation of the transfer of the function to DBE. We are working very closely with DBE at the moment to ensure that, you know, once the provinces get the rollover letters, we are able to implement, you know, this stimulus package and be able, you know, to give to those who qualify. There's a likelihood that in the 48,000 that we have spoken about, some might not even qualify, which will also lead to us all going again into underspending, because it will be dependent as to whether the people qualify or not. So we are envisaging that by the end of March 2023, working together with the Department of Basic Education leading this process, Department of Basic Education leading this process, will be able, you know, to pay all the eligible workforce. I will recommend that you consider the presentation in respect of the performance. This one, I skipped it because Minister spoke about it in terms of the migration of his city. So,
I'll give the digits, I'll give two digits just to make the recommendation and close. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, Isabella. I will share the project.
For my late arrival, I have been in the portfolio committee on social development when we're presenting our performance report in the fourth quarter. The minister has also had to step into that meeting. I think there's just two things, Honorable Chair, that I wanted to pull out. One is that the underspending of the national grant is largely due to the ECG stimulus package, which could not, of course, be concluded because of the outstanding information that was required from ECG services in order to process the application. And we had to, as Isabella would have indicated, follow a very stringent process in terms of
decision verification process in order to ensure that we pay
the right people or the right recipients. Outside of that, we would have been found wanting by the Auditor General, and then there are consequences for us that we'd have to deal with as an organization. And so we were not able to process everything because of the outstanding information. And we went all out working with the NGOs and other members of the sector to ensure that we are able to get the additional information from the sector, even the sector itself, in terms of the forums that the sector comprises of, were part and parcel of reaching out to ECD services to, in order to get the additional information that is required. As Isabella indicated, the rollover applications and the provisional approval from the National from the Treasury. With that, we'll be able to allocate the balance of the funding to the current financial year to DBE to continue dispensing. So then, of course, some who have applied may not necessarily be found qualifying in terms of the criteria. However, we will ensure that we continue as we have been working with basic education to support them in that regard. They leave now since the transfer and migration of the function, and we provide the support. So we will continue working with them. In fact, even now, we work with them very closely with the HODs on both sides. We continue to ensure that we're able to provide the necessary support on that note. The second issue is just a quick matter I want to bring in line with one of the aims of the the conditional grant, the third aim in particular, that relates to the support that we needed to provide under COVID-19. There was a case that was brought by a number of applicants against the minister and 8 MECs for not having paid grants in the during the COVID-19 period, not having paid full subsidies. We were under a bit of pressure on that, and that the High Court found against us, that we appealed that. And last week, not a week before last, the Supreme Court of Appeals upheld the appeal against the minister and the 8 MECs in that matter, because there were a number of relief measures sought on that matter, and so we appealed successfully. We're glad that we're able to. This is important to highlight because we must indicate that as a government, we will not abdicate our responsibility in terms of ensuring that we provide the necessary support and I think that was a very important matter that was brought by the Supreme Court of Appeals a week and a half ago, and we continue in that vein to ensure that we provide the necessary support in line with legislation and the various prescripts that we have to, so that we, as the Minister indicated in her remarks, ensure that in line with the Constitution, we take care of the best interests of the child, particularly the provision of ECD. So, Honorable Chair, I just thought that I would mention those two matters very quickly as we conclude the presentation. I'm not sure, Fanny, if you have anything to add. Fanny is fine, and Isabella, you're fine. Okay, thank you very much, Chair. I think that concludes it from social media.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Team Social Development for the presentation. I'm going to now request members of the committee and also members from the provinces to raise their hands, indicate by a show of hand if you want to participate in the debate. I know the subject is next to our hearts and our constituencies. It talks to the very vulnerable part of the sector of our constituencies. While we do that and noting honorable members, I have just the three things that I want to raise. I saw 1, 2, 3, 4 hands. We are aware and conscious that we are dealing with the issues, and the questions that we will raise are questions that are relevant to the year in which we are dealing with, while social development was still responsible for the ECD before it went to basic education. And I think these deliberations and the recommendations or resolutions that we will take as a way forward will assist Department of Basic Education in dealing with the challenges going forward. My first question to social development, maybe to a certain extent, if a treasurer would want to have a say on it, is what steps has been taken to address the delays in the procurement processes that led to the delays in securing land for new centers, and whether there has been a consequence management. It has been a buzzword, the consequence management, because we really are concerned that the things are happening and there's no consequence management at the end of the day. So has there been consequence management dealing with these problems that we experienced, or you experienced as the social development, so that these can also send a message to basic education as the responsible department now. And on slide 5, the presentation indicates that the registered and unregistered ECD programs do qualify for maintenance grants. I think this is what the presentation is said. I don't know if the presentation on slide 5 speaks to what the minister has said. And having said that, I want to know, why is the maintenance grant given to the unregistered ECD programs? And this must not send a wrong message that I'm not sensitive, I'm not supporting the unregistered ECDs, but I just want to know that why is it that the maintenance grant is given to the unregistered ECD programs? Because I want to understand that the condition attached to this maintenance grant is that it must be given to registered centers. If I'm wrong, you will correct me. So to me, it looks like the condition was overlooked. And lastly, to the presenters, I want to know what issues led to the under expenditure in the following provinces that you have identified. that is Northwest, Eastern Cape, Gauteng, and Mpumalanga, where I come from. How expenditure reported in this province is going to be resolved going forward. This is something that will help the Department of Basic Education. How is this going to be resolved going forward? So in terms of the expenditure on the conditional grant, and also what is the impact of this on the service delivery? Because we always say as a appropriations committee, we follow the money, we oversight on the expenditure of the money, but most importantly, we want to see the impact, the overall impact, the outcome in terms of the service delivery. But mostly, the picture of the Northwest is not looking good. That's all what I can say. Having said that, honorable members and the two departments, can I now recognize honorable Ryder?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. Yeah, thanks for the presentations. I think that my first take out of it is just to say that quite disappointing to see that 8 out of 9 provinces actually sacrifice funds back to Treasury. Now, you know, there can be instances of underspending here and there, which we must always interrogate, but when it gets to a point where you're having to sacrifice funds back to Treasury, no rollover is permitted. It normally indicates that there's hasn't been a plan, or if there is a plan, it's kind of fallen to bits and there's no chance of resuscitating. So quite disappointing to note that. 8 out of 9 of the provinces, and of course, I think Northwest and Gauteng are the two that I'm particularly disappointed by. Of course, I think we all know that Northwest, the need in that province is stark and harsh. And of course, with Gauteng having the volume of people, and of course, with the higher employment rates in Gauteng, that generally means that there's a bigger need for early childhood development centres, certainly to act as caregivers while parents are away at work, etc. So a little disappointing there, and hopefully we can see an improving trend as we move over across to the Education Department having control of the grant. But I think that transition we're going to have to watch as well. It appears to have been well managed to date, but certainly the transition I think we need to keep an eye on. So, Chairperson, I think that if we can diarise so long for a similar discussion in a year's time again, I think that would be most constructive. Mr. Pillay, from an agriculture expert last week to childhood development this week, congratulations on your latest doctorate. Now you know what it feels like with an MP with the breadth of topics we need to be experts in. But I just wanted to know, there was a top-up to equitable share indicator that you placed on the screen. I didn't understand that in the slightest. So if you can help me to understand what you meant by the top-up to equitable share, does that mean that some money is being taken from the equitable share in order to top up where the grant funding is insufficient? That's what I got from my first take, but perhaps you can just explain that a little bit more for me. My question around non-centre-based grant or components of the grant was partly answered by the Department of Social Development, but certainly I'd like a little bit more information about what non-centre-based grant funding is actually doing practically on the ground. How does that work? Perhaps you can... that question I think is more for DSD than for Treasury. The next one, look, verification of beneficiaries for Presidential Employment Initiative. So that function you said is being done by the IDT. Now, the IDT is an entity in the public works portfolio, and they are historically really bad at doing this type of thing. I'm not sure why this role has been given to them, and perhaps Treasury can tell us. Is it specifically, you know, I presume that it's the Presidential Employment Initiative, so it's the presidency that has allocated this function to them, because historically, I mean, the reason that Public Works gets qualified audits all the time is because of their verification processes that they're not doing properly. Largely, I don't want to say that's the only thing to blame, but certainly in my experience when I was on that portfolio in 2017, 2018, that was my experience. And, you know, I'm not sure that, that housing a verification process, which is a largely administrative function in the IDT, which is supposed to be a an implementing agent of construction type projects, you know, and I'm not sure that it just makes sense to put an administrative role in there. You know, is it the presidency that's done that, or is this part of the grant funding that has had this impact? And then, Chair, I want to pick up on something that you touched on very briefly, but from a quite a different angle. And this is the issue around the unregistered ECD centres. And the issue that we have is that ECD centres struggle with funding generally. And there's a registration process, but there's various registration processes that ECDs need to follow. And the, you know, there was an article that spoke very strongly to me. It came out in 2021, and you know, it was titled something along the lines of, "Don't try and enforce your Santon standards in Orange Farm." And the reality is that ECDs, in order to register, in order to qualify for certain funding pockets, are required to meet certain standards. And I think that we all agree that there needs to be a certain degree of standards of safety, certainly, where children are being cared for. And that's important. And the reality is you are going to get different levels of compliance with that in different places with, you know, different resources and means available to them, and amounts that they can charge for daycare. So, you know, one would expect that a Santon daycare facility or early childhood development center is charging a substantial amount of money, whereas an Orange Farm one is relying mostly on the grants. But my question really is, what assistance are we giving to ECDs in order to help them to become compliant? Because this grant is only one component of the funding that is available across the various departments in order to help ECDs and to help look after young children. So what assistance are we giving in order to, you know, enable ECDs to become compliant with as much of the regulations as they possibly can, considering their environmental constraints? And what are we doing to ensure the safety of the children, making sure that the grants are being spent in a way that really ends up benefiting the children? And, you know, the comment was made earlier on, the interests of a child are paramount in every decision that we make about this. That principle must be followed. So I really would like to hear more about, what are we doing to assist in terms of compliance, registering and safety? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ryder. And Dr. Mulesani, you next.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to everyone. Let me join colleagues by welcoming the presentations. I have realized, I'm aware that my questions might need Department of Education. Social Department might not be able to respond because now they are no longer in charge for ECD. But this one, let me bring this one to social development. The migration of the ECD from social development to the Department of Education. It started on the 1st of April 2022. I also want to find out how far is the process of migration and when is it expected to be completed, because it has an impact in the smooth operations. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Ntate Mletsane. Ntate Karim?
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, Chairperson, you said that this issue is very close to our hearts, and I think you're right. It cannot but be, given the nature of our society. More and more studies, as we all know, have shown that the first 100 days in particular determine quite significantly a person's life chances. It's not as if you came from a poor, destitute home in an informal settlement, you can't become a professor of astrophysics. Okay? You can, and people have done that, right? And we have many examples, not enough, but many examples in this country and elsewhere in the world. You can. But overall, your life chances are severely dimmed, let's put it that way, if you come from those backgrounds, right? So given the class and race inequalities in our society and the increasing polarization, this issue is far more important, Chairperson, than it's ever been. Now, you know, the first issue that worries, I think, some of us is, to what extent are officials and us politicians also sufficiently internalizing the importance of this issue? We can talk whatever we want about tackling poverty and inequality and all that, but if we don't deal with it, obviously it's a long-term consequence to be dealing with early childhood development and impact. But if we don't address this issue, a lot of our aims and objectives, some of which, or many of which, cut across political parties, are not going to be achieved. This is so, so important. Now, it's being handed over to early childhood development. I don't know to what extent officials are in that department sufficiently clued up on the gravity of this project and on its completely crucial importance to the National Development Plan and our broader consensually agreed goals on reducing poverty and inequality. So I don't know. So the remark I'm making, I don't know whether both departments want to respond to it. How much is being done? Obviously, there are officials in the Department of Social Development, National Intervention, who also may have lacked the internalization I speak of. But, you know, I would imagine that because ECG has not been on the DBE, there's some sense in which the transition should also involve some sort of joint, you know, like education, or call it what you will, or information classes between the exiting officials and the incoming officials, so to speak, about the value and importance of this. Secondly, it might have been helpful. I know, Chairperson, being a chair around 12 years, I know how impossibly difficult it is. You're doing very well, Chairperson, we put it to you, in getting other committees present and other departments present, Department of Finance. I really think that it's even ideal to have DBE here also, so to get a better sense from them what the issues are. We're hearing from the other two departments, but we don't know enough what DBE's view is. Thirdly, related to my first point, I don't think we should wait for another year, Chairperson. This is so important. I know our programs are overpacked and there may not be the space, but I think we should seek to do it once every 6 months, or even 3 times a year if we can. This is like, Chairperson, this is utterly crucial. I don't mean to sound over melodramatic, but it's almost more important. Look, I'm out of this space. I'm not an academic anymore. But every now and then you read reviews in the media, especially the serious media, studies done all over the world about this, right? And maybe it's a sociologist in me, the pre-1994 one, but, and therefore you exaggerate the significance. But politically as well, I didn't know these things in 1994 when I came here, okay? I thought sociology, but, and we dealt with stratification, divisions, but not enough on this. Now, why it is true this slightly belongs to DBE? Obviously, it's not strictly an educational issue because these children are still strongly under their parental care. Usually, it's one parent related, and often, most often, it's women. So the question I want to ask is, you know, you can hand over, but surely there should be some 3 to 5 year, like, I don't know, sort of engagement between the two departments, so a structure at national and provincial level that meets, you know, like once every 2-3 months, and then maybe even less over the next 5 years, so that the social development implications of ECD are communicated to the Department of Basic Education officials. So I'm just saying that. Let me, Chairperson, I've forgotten what point I wrote with you. Give me a moment. My computer's just going blank. What are the other things? But getting older, Chairperson, one always used to be able to do this, but as we get older. Yeah, I wanted to ask. So Tracy says in its concluding remarks that the challenges that the social development department experience of maintaining the new construction should be considered. I'm not sure what this means, Jefferson. What action must follow? Considered. Okay, we can consider it, but can they also suggest action? They're a department. They're meant to implement. They're officials. Normally, it's politicians that write stuff like this because they're great at babbling and hopeless at doing. Well, that's my general view. I know it'll annoy some MPs, but so be it. I mean, I have a right to that view. So should be considered. So what is my question? The DB should look at training, and yes, I agree. But Treasury surely has a role yet, Jefferson. They're the financial people, right? So it's about the new department, DBE, and Treasury and businesses. And capacity stuff because they've got the financial skills in the face of Treasury. Finally, I am slightly bereaved that departments recommending to Parliament, like on a social development thing, I know they mean well, but at the end they're recommending to the committee. Now, it may be because the former MEC will know that officials often at the end have a long report, most of which is unnecessary to say, in my view, is to get, I'm sure, as I just 14-page report, that really are 2 pages of substance, right? But at the end, they will recommend to a minister or an MEC. But I don't think it's appropriate for a department to recommend to Parliament. It's the other way around. We recommend to the department. I'm not being unduly critical, but we need to get the relationship right. It's Parliament that holds the department and ministry to oversight. So I am surprised. The recommendations, but it's not a big deal. I know what the person is saying, the piece, the official, and the person means well, but perhaps we should just draw that to the attention without being unduly critical. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Karen. Is there any other hand that I might have not seen, that I've missed? Any of the members who wants to speak on the matter before I allow the department to respond or clarify? None from the province, none from the members that are left. Okay, Team Treasurer, over to you. Can you clarify and give answers to the questions?
Thank you, Chair. I'll allow Emmanuel to go first, then I'll add. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So, just in terms of Honorable Ryder's questions on the top-up to the equitable share, so just an example, so it could be like a province is subsidizing a child at 13 rand per day. So the top-up, and that 13 rand would have come from the equitable share. So what the top-up does is it adds another 4 rand to bring it up to the standard, which is 17 rand. So the what we're saying is the province is contributing something, but it's not enough. So the top-up just brings it up to the 17 rand there. The The one about verification of beneficiaries, it's actually done by the Department of Social Development, or it was done by them. When I spoke about the IDT, it was with regards to the maintenance component. So it wasn't about beneficiaries, and they were the one of the implementing agents, especially on the new constructions of ECD centers there. In terms of Mr. Honorable Karim's question around the challenges that the DBE should consider, so we're referring to the challenges that social development had experienced already, which is not peculiar to social development, especially when you look at procurement challenges and delays by implementing agents there. So one of the implementing agents, as I indicated, was the IDT, and one of the key areas that we look at, where, especially when it comes to implementing agents that do not perform, is contract management, whether they're being managed properly, or in terms of what the contract says and stipulations are, the time frames and the milestones and those sort of issues in terms of the project plan. So as I indicated, we think DVE is quite well placed in terms of infrastructure delivery from experience with the grants that they have. For example, the education infrastructure grant, they have well capacitated units. And they have planners and people who deal with contract management. So when they should actually consider the delays and the performance by contractors that social development experience, and think about that when they're approaching it. Thanks. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Mr. Play. Uha?
Thank you, Chair. So I think your question about procurement and consequence management, perhaps we'll leave it to social development to respond to it. So maybe just to add to Emmanuel's response that, when you're looking at education, the reason we've got that last statement around the challenges around infrastructure is that, as you said, education tends really to do well in implementing their projects. When you look at the spending of their grants, they tend to do well, and we think that they might have more capacity than education, because if you look at them, they don't even struggle with reporting their projects on the infrastructure reporting model that we have as National Treasury. They are one of the first sectors that do that. And if you look at, we have this infrastructure delivery management system that we've been implementing for years. They've been part of the IDIP, the earlier program that National Treasury introduced in terms of how to improve education infrastructure and even health for that matter. So we believe that they might struggle in the sense that they're not used to delivering at the centers, but at the formalized schools that they have. But we believe that once they put that those schools as part of their programs, those centers as part of their program, they could really still do well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Team Treasury. I think Emmanuel and Oha, you have made a good work so far. And I see Team Social Development, you have sorted your framing, and over to you, DG and your team. Now I can see you well. You are not representing Honorable Zulu. She was not going to be happy with you. Thank you anyway. You can now respond or give clarities to the questions that we had for you.
Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think they were waiting for the technician in me to come and assist them. They should have been able to put the screen back. So there are a number of questions that were raised. Some have already been answered by the Treasury that link to both departments. But what I will do is I will ask Fanny, the CFO, to come in first, and then I will ask Isabella, to come in, and then Anita, and then I will wrap up with responses to the questions. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Wolfers.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Thank you for the questions. Let me address some of the questions, right? One is on the underspending. Yes. When we started this project on the stimulus package, we had sessions with all the various CFOs in the provinces to ensure that we put strict guidelines in place to ensure that we pay this money to the right person at the right time. Now, it would look like that we're underspending in the first 2 years, but the money has been transferred to the provinces, and they've also, there was, if you look at the compliance requirements for an ECD practitioner to be able to get paid in terms of this, there was a number of things that they have to ensure that this is done in the correct way. So it might be looking at under expenditure, but we haven't found one audit finding in terms of this project since its inception 2 years ago. The equitable share, I'm not too sure about the question, Chairperson. The equitable share might relate to the provincial allocation that was given. Remember when this additional grant is transferred to the various provinces, this money doesn't come back to national for us to request for rollovers, and this has been done in provinces, and also that's why this allocation is for the rollovers that you see in terms of the subsidy and the maintenance and as well as the PES is allocated to the various provincial equitable share in terms of that. And it forms part of their allocation in terms of this grant. But provinces, that amount goes to direct to the provinces and not via the national. So in terms of procurement and consequence management, Jefferson, from where I am sitting, there's no CFO in the provincial DSU that has mentioned any wrongdoing in terms of the procurement for the payment of the stimulus package. It went through the CSD for the ECDs to ensure that these ECDs do exist on the CSD. And then there's also physical verification to ensure that these the right person gets to the right specific ECD for payment. So from the prior two financial years, there was no audit finding, as I said, in terms of related for the payment of the stimulus package, and therefore procurement has been done in the correct manner in terms of the DFMA requirements, the supply chain requirements. So there's no consequence management to be imposed in terms of the stimulus package. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Isabella. Thanks, Anne.
Thank you very much, Chair, and let me appreciate the questions from the members. Let me start with the question on top-up to equitable share. What does it mean on the slide that was put there in terms of children who benefited? The top up, remember we had provinces that were not giving the same amount of subsidy to children across, you know, the country. You'll find that one province is giving 15 rand, the other one is paying 17 rand. So the top-up grant is to equitable share. It's those children that are already receiving a subsidy through equitable share, but we had to top up with the conditional grant to ensure that, you know, there is parity in terms of the subsidy that is being given to children, which is now currently at 17 rand per child. Now, when the question on the non-center base, what do we mean by non-center base? What are they doing? We've got center base is what we call the crèches, the buildings, the children that receive is early learning in the centers. But the non-center base is for those children where there is no infrastructure at all, and they just get, you know, a stimulation and early learning. It can be 2 to 3 times a week, you know, just to ensure that, you know, those children also access early childhood development. And it's mainly in those rural, deep rural area or in the disadvantaged areas where, you know, there is no infrastructure at all. Let me clarify the issue of the IDT it is not IDT, but it is DGMT, which stands for DG Murray Trust. It's one of the partners that we are working with in the ECD sector that are supporting us in terms of ensuring that there is access of early childhood development to children. And these are the people who assisted us in terms of ensuring that we support the early childhood development sector when we were dealing with the issues of stimulus package. They were able, you know, to give us the volunteers who came and supported the ECDs. I remember they also availed more than 2,000 Harambe youth who supported, you know, these ECDs to ensure that, you know, they meet the requirement in ensuring that they receive the stimulus package. The assistance that we are giving, you know, to ECDs to make them comply, we are continuously building capacity to these ECDs. For example, we find them wanting in terms of compliance issues such as the preparation of financial statements, the documents that are required. So the staff is on a continuous basis, you know, working and supporting these ECDs to ensure that they comply. And also in terms of compliance to registration, after we did the Bangasale project, where we called on all ECDs in the country, you know, to avail themselves, especially the unregistered, with the aim of ensuring that we support them to meet at least the basic minimum requirement for registration. We also had to partner with partners in the ECD sector, where we made, you know, the ECD processes simple to the sector, or the packages in terms of what is it that is entailed to register, how do they go about registration step by step, but also creating the jamboree, you know, where we bring them together at one place to assist them in terms of registration. The issue of migration, how far are we? We have already completed migration. On the 1st of April, there was a handover done by our minister to Minister Mutara in terms of her taking over the ECD. What is currently happening, as DG has already said, we cannot just relinquish, you know, the function just like that, because we are dealing with children. What we are placing at the center is the best interest of a child. We as the Department of Social Development, at the transitional stage, we are working together with the Department of Basic Education to ensure that, you know, there is no interruption in service, or if it is there, it is at a minimal level. I am not sure.
Yes.
Whether, yeah.
I think you covered it. I would like Anisha to come in and deal with the issue of registration, unregistered ECDs, but I'd like you to bring it from the context of the nature of the sector, the informal nature of the sector, the historic manner in which the sector has always operated, and then talk to the interventions that we've done in the short term that we've since handed over to Department of Basic Education. Anita.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. So as the DG indicated, I'll deal with the issues around the unregistered ECDs and the kind of assistance that we are providing to unregistered ECDs. I think as the DG had mentioned, and the Honourable Ryder had also set the context of unregistered ECDs in the country, we did a couple of audits as the Department of Social Development, and in those studies, we found that there are more unregistered ECDs than there are registered ECDs. And primarily, it is because the ECD sector is, by nature, a very informal sector. It had evolved out of more child-minding type of services as opposed to early childhood development. And because of that, you know, historically, mothers and grandmothers have started these informal creches. And so it still remains largely within that context. So when we did our studies and having understood that there are lots of unregistered ECDs, primarily in your most deprived, historically disadvantaged communities across the country. We know that they struggle with funding. We know that they are not able to meet the registration requirements, given that we have norms and standards that have been set in terms of the Children's Act. And in recognizing that, we know that one size does not fit all as part of the norms and standards. So what we did is we decided to take a very developmental approach towards looking at the norms and standards, because the Act allowed us to do that. And what we then did was that we developed a conditional registration framework, which was more a differentiated approach towards looking at registration,
where we began to categorize it into different standards in terms of bronze, silver, and gold as part of the conditional registration framework. And then to answer the question from the chairperson why we are assisting unregistered ECDs, what we then found is that unregistered ECDs were not able to meet the conditional registration requirement. And so through the conditional grant, we then developed a pre-registration support package, which is basically targeting your unregistered ECDs and trying to bring them into the net of a conditionally registered ECD, because unregistered ECDs were not able to access the subsidy. And that's where your poor children are. They're not able to get the nutrition
that they require on a daily basis.
Can you please mute? Aroni? Mutswane? Honorable Mutswane? Honorable Mutswane, can you please mute? My apologies. DG, my apologies. Can you assist the host? Can assist with the muting? Sometimes these things they do happen unaware. MEC, I think was busy or with something.
No, my apologies, Chair. My apologies.
Okay, it's fine. We understand. You can continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. So those are the reasons primarily that we introduced the pre-registration support package to begin to assist unregistered ECDs. There are a number of unregistered ECDs across the country. This is where the children are currently receiving ECD services, and we really needed to find a way to begin to assist them. In terms of other matters that the members had raised in terms of the infrastructure program, with the function having moved to DBE, you know, DBE is better placed to manage the infrastructure portfolio given the capacity that they have and the skill sets that they have, as well as managing the ECD DBE conditional grants that they have. What we are assisting DBE through the transition period is to look at the challenges that we've had in social development and trying to mitigate it on the DBE side, which is to strengthen contract management in the main. The other thing that we're working with DBE on is looking at a different procurement strategy where we want to set up framework contracts. We were able to successfully do it with the Limpopo province in the DSD space, and we've seen significant improvement in terms of their performance in that regard. And we think through the introduction of framework contracts at the DBE side, it will allow the provinces to better perform in relation to the grant. I think the impact on service delivery, of course, those projects that have not been completed in the 21-22 financial year are carried forward into the current financial year, and those are the projects that would be first prioritized to be completed in the current financial year. Thanks, DG.
Thank you very much, Anita. Okay. No, thanks. So, Chair, let me perhaps just talk to four things. Firstly, I think the explanation by Fani is quite useful. We've not received any AG findings with regards to the stimulus package at all since inception. We've gone through two iterations, and we haven't received any findings. And I think that attests to, I suppose, the manner in which we manage the stimulus package. And I'll talk a little bit to this now in response to Honorable Ryder's input. But I must just say that, you know, there's a very delicate balance that we have to strike between paying quickly because of the urgency that is required versus paying correctly, I would put it. I was going to say later, but I think you put correctly, versus paying correctly. In most instances, you pay quickly, you get burned by the Auditor General and by the National Treasury in terms of the rules and regulations. And this is not to say in any way that we should not have systems ready and in place. But I think it's important. We face this challenge, Chair, with the 350 grant at the moment, where it's either we pay quickly or we pay correctly. Paying correctly, essentially, in most instances, would mean that you pay later. And we don't want to do that, but at the same time, we want to do the right thing. by making sure that we pay the right person at the right time, so that we're able to dispense the support that we ought to. But there's a very delicate balance, even to an extent where you land up with litigation, which in some cases force the defendants, which would be us, to pay punitive costs. And as in the recent case that I highlighted this morning, luckily we were able to get through that. But it has a number of ripple effects, and most of these end up leading to litigation. So it's a very delicate balance that we have to strike, noting the urgency that is required to dispense the funding. That's the first point I wanted to make. The second point, Honorable Ryder, I think it's important to highlight that, yes, indeed, there is a concern that funds were not completely dispensed. But I think that it doesn't attest to the fact that there is no plan. In fact, there has been a very thorough plan, a very detailed plan that was put in place. And of course, some things didn't go according to the plan, particularly because of the dependencies that are required. And we did a risk mitigation strategy attached to the plan, and so on and so forth. But there are a number of aspects that may not have gone wrong, which I think we've perfected going forward. It's important to highlight that we've learned significant lessons through the disbursement of the support through the stimulus package. But it's equally important to note that this was the very first time that we had to dispense money in this quick format and needed to get money quickly to recipients, because we needed to respond to the need. But it's equally important, and the Treasury is here and will attest to this, that the Presidential Employment Stimulus Package was rolled out, was meant to be a very quick rollout sort of plan. So it was rolled out, the monies were received very late towards the end. In some cases, I think we received the money in November, and the end of the financial year was in March, and you had to spend within a quick space of time. And so the manner in which, and again, we're perfecting these things because it's new, the manner in which we're taking that forward, I'm sure if we have to come back here next time in a year or so, there would have certainly been many lessons learned and better places put in place, better measures rather put in place to address some of these challenges. Now, so Honorable Moletsane, I think one thing Isabella was supposed to add was that even though we migrated in April 2022, officially in terms of the signing off of the relevant funding and prescripts, as it were, the migration process actually started more than 2 years ago. The ANC was very clear, the directives that we were given had clear timeframes. And you'd recall in the President's State of the Nation address, I think it is 2019 or 18, if I'm not mistaken, he had given directives for us to move on this. We started the process then. Because the budget process has got to be concluded within a specific space of time, we're not able to get the budgetary aspects passed across. And so we halted the year. But we've continued, this is a continuous process. One of the guidances from our ministers that we received from both ministers was that, yes, the function is handed over, but you don't let your foot off the pedal completely. You still work very closely with DBE to ensure that we provide the support. And we are meeting regularly between ourselves. Just last week, we had meetings with both ministers and the portfolio committees on the migration to provide progress and on where we are and be able to plug gaps where necessary. So I just think that it's important to highlight that it's an ongoing process. And yes, at some point it will be completely handed over. I think we are looking at 12 months to 24 months. It may even be longer than that. But of course, as I indicated, it's a continuous process and we started it just over 2 years ago. Then I think, you know, there's a very important aspect raised by Honorable Karim around, and this is my last comment. To what extent are we actually analyzing the nature of EC? There's a few points I'd make on this. And I think Honorable Karim really started to talk to the future of what we should be doing. And I'll make a few proposals linked to this. Firstly, we always say that early childhood development is everyone's business to deal with. And so it's not just for the government, for the Department of Social Development or Basic Education, but it's for all government departments in all three spheres of government. It's for the private sector
to deal with. It's for civil society organizations to deal with. It's for, yes, parents, families within the context of the family units, the teachers and everybody, but it's literally everybody's business to deal with. And everybody should take an interest in society to deal with issues of early childhood development, particularly because it deals with our future and the trajectory of our country. And it's important to note that, you know, there are scientific studies that have proven, that give evidence, and I think you mentioned this, Honorable Karim, that the foundational phases of children is very important if you are to have a sound future, particularly in the case of ECD because it deals with human development. And I think that we've got to do a lot more, not just as a government, but as all sectors and spheres of society, sectors of society in the manner in which we deal with ECD. I cannot underscore the importance of the matter of investing in early childhood development. Historically, there has not been adequate funding provided for ECD. As Anita said, a lot of our grannies, our mothers, aunties in the main started ECDs because of a passion that they had. And in most instances, it's been difficult to really find, I mean, at some points we did an analysis and there are registered ECDs. And I think what through the Bangasali program, which is a very useful program, which is now handed over to basic education, we've worked with NGOs, stakeholders, Nelson Mandela Foundation, and a number of other NGOs who are in touch on the ground with all of society. We've worked very hard with them to ensure that we firstly find out where ECDs are, just to get them to raise their hands, to say, hey, I'm here. And then from there begin the process of how do we assist them in terms of registering. So we've continuously made a call to the Treasury about adding additional resources to the sector for this. And I think there's a bit that has currently gone through DBE around additional support for ECDs. It's a fundamental matter. If we are to get the future of this country right, we are to get we are to ensure that we intervene at the most elementary level, which is at the foundational level of ECD. Lastly, I thought we've spoken to the number of improvement plans, but there's a suggestion I'd like to make, Honorable Chair. But maybe these improvement plans that we've started talking to, that we've migrated and shifted to DBE, which they are, of course, taking and elevating, maybe the committee may want to consider a joint committee briefing with the National Treasury, because they are the holders of the funds. Ourselves, basic education, the Department of COCTA, because COCTA has a critical role to play, particularly in municipalities, when it comes to whether it be lands or whether it be services such as an infrastructure. It has a critical role to play. So maybe COCTA would be important to be part. The Department of Health, we know the importance of the first 1,000 days of children. We know the importance of various health standards that we need to meet, but also the Department of Home Affairs. We still have, in some ECDs, children who don't have the registration documents and stuff like that, which we have to intervene in and assist. But also, we may want to bring the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. So this is an important aspect, and I would maybe perhaps propose that we should do this, but I also think that at a community level, there ought to be regular engagement around ECD so that we're able to ensure that we secure the future of this country by investing correctly and by making sure that we provide the necessary support from all angles. So I would like to leave it at that, Honorable Chair. Maybe on a lighter note, Honorable Karim, indeed, we take the point that we shouldn't be recommending to the portfolio committee. We are just, noting some of the, we were hoping that the committee would just take notes on some of the matters, but indeed, we take the point. But thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I hope we've managed to respond to all questions, of course. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Acting DG. You just thanked the Honorable Karim on what he said, but on your last statement, you made recommendations that we should look into calling all these departments as role players. And I'm sending it back to you to say
maybe you should, you must initiate those engagements amongst yourselves as a department, so that you can get everybody involved and have plans and play all those roles, because if we have to call everybody has a role to play. Human settlement, when they deal with the planning for human settlement, ECD is part of what they need to consider, economic activities, water and sanitation, in terms of the Department of Water and Sanitation, the role that COCTA or the municipality has to play, all those things needs to be considered. So I think you as a department, you need to initiate in the engagement that you are having with the DPA, that there are other role players that need to join the team. I'm not sure if you have a team social development. You have clarified my concern, or maybe it should be treasury. What is the condition that is attached to the grant? I saw the hand of, before you answer that, or you clarify me, I saw the hand of Honorable Dennis Ryder. I don't know if there are other members who want to have a second bite. Honorable Ryder?
Yeah, sorry, Chair. Thank you. No, I just wanted to say that I thought I agreed with you. As much as I agree with the recommendations from the acting DG, I do think it is something that needs to be initiated, if not by his department, certainly coordinated through the education department, and would be a great process of launching their onboarding by having such a broad consultative forum and coming together with a plan. And I think that's something that's come out quite strongly in your comments, in Mr. Karin's comments, in my comments, and in the responses, is that there needs to be a bigger plan on this. There needs to be better coordination, but I do think that that's exactly what we should be taking through to our follow-up meetings that both Mr. Karim and I have suggested need to happen, albeit we may disagree. I don't think we disagree on the timing. It's just, you know, it's a small issue. But I do think we need to have a follow-up where we do address exactly that and ask. I mean, it's not for us to come up with a plan about how the departments must be cooperating. They must come and tell us about their plan. I think that's highly appropriate, and I think that I agree 100% with your sentiments. Don't make us do your work. Do your work and tell us about it, but it must be on our radar. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ryder. It looks like there's no other member who wants to have a second bite. Okay, come in.
Yeah, Chair, thank you very much, and apology for connecting late due to previous meeting and also a network problem and load shedding. Chair, just a question, maybe a general question, in terms of looking at your rural areas, in terms of farms and those areas who are not easy accessible. Is there any plan that the department is having in terms of the services to be accessed to those areas? It's just a general question, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Njatu. Team Social Development, can you please in brief just comment? I don't know, Oha, if you also want to say something.
I think we will attempt to respond. Fanny, I'll ask him to deal with the framework that exists around the conditional grants. Which details the condition essentially,
Okay.
Yeah,
thanks, Chairperson. So the conditional grant framework is set by National Treasury, but there's a whole committee that deals with between the department and the National Treasury on what are the
the principles for this allocation, and there's also requirements, and some of the requirements there must be a clear business plan. If you look at the business plan now, various matters that must be addressed in terms of business plan, then there's conditions in terms of the grant, how the grant should flow based on what compliance requirements there is. Then there's also roles and responsibility. What is the role and responsibility of the national department? What's the roles and responsibilities of the provincial department? Then there's issues of monitoring and reporting that must be addressed in terms of the framework. It also gives the amount that's going to be allocated in terms of this specific conditional grant. What is the life expectancy of this conditional grant? And it deals then basically with the payment schedule. Now the payment schedule gives an indication to both the receiving department as well as the national treasury to say what amount will be transferred at what specific period of the financial year, given that there is a monitoring report that's been received or a progress report before the next payment will be paid. So nothing been dealt with and approved and then enacted by the Division of Revenue Act, the cabinet. So there are clear frameworks and guidelines in place that basically ensures that this conditional grant is being allocated, is being supported, and is being monitored. Yes. So, but there's clear guidelines from the national. We're not sure whether the national treasury wants to include or add additional, but there are clear frameworks, templates for this specific thing. But the basic important thing is that clear guidelines for both the receiving departments as well as the national in terms of the guidelines that will basically encapsulate what needs to happen at what stage of the project.
Yeah, and I think what we've also done is make sure that we orientate the necessary officials within the whole of government, be it at national and the provincial level, to understand the guidelines, implementation thereof. And I think to a large extent, we'll also make these frameworks available to the sector and engage with them in terms of guidance so they understand the rules of engagement, as it were, so that everybody's on the same page. So I think that's the crux of the plan. I just also wanted to agree that indeed government should lead the role, the lead on enhancing coordination, alignment, roles and responsibilities, and elevating the support of the sector. And we will indeed engage with the relevant government departments in terms of how we can perhaps prepare a consolidated approach towards how we move on this, Chair. But maybe Treasury, through you, Chair, may want to add to what Fanny has said. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG and the team. Oha and Mr. Pillay.
Thank you, Chair. So yes, as indicated, so the grant framework, which obviously, we work with the sector to finalize it, is in place, and it has been kind of transferred to the DBE sector. But maybe just to also to indicate that prior to this move of ECD to the education sector, the sector education has a program called ECD, as much as it might not be for the first 1,000 days or of the child, but they members will recall there's a great R program that those learners must be at school, so they have some sort of an idea about the importance of early childhood development. So and there are also as well responsibilities of the transferring officer, which is a national department, and also the responsibilities of the receiving officer, which is the provincial departments in this regard. So and obviously, the purpose and everything that we normally indicate, Chair. So indeed, there those conditions have not necessarily changed from what they were when the function was with the social development sector. So I think I'll leave it there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ohan. Honorable members, I think these are the responses And we have engaged, we were given a second round to make a bite. It looks like members are happy with, or they are satisfied with the responses and the recommendations that they have. And going forward as a committee, we will deal with the reports in terms of this and the way forward on how we are going to implement this. But also I think team or both departments, they have taken to heart the recommendations from the members in as far as moving forward to make sure that this program of ECD and the condition, the conditional grants are utilized correctly and are benefiting those who are supposed to benefit, poor, the poor of the poorest that are relying on the system. Thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity to thank the two departments and the members from the provinces, and allow you to leave the platform, and members of the Select Committee on Appropriations to remain on the platform together with the team to support the staff to deal with the in-house matters. Thank you very much, colleagues.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Ryder, is the this emblem, this logo of Gauteng, is the government logo the same as that one of the legislature?
Yeah, as far as I know, yes, Chair.
No, it's not.
Then I misunderstood your question.
Now I'm saying that logo that you have on the here, yeah, on this picture is the government logo of the provincial government. But I understand, I might be wrong, my understanding is that the logo of the provincial legislature of Gauteng is different from this one.
This is the logo that appears in our chamber up above on the wall. So that's what actually inspired me to place it here, is the fact that this is the province I represent, and that's the logo we have in our chamber. So
in the legislature. Okay, so if that's the case, then it's fine. I don't have a, I just wanted to verify if are they the same, or is this the one that represent legislature, or it's not an issue. It's not a transmission. Members, I think the departmental representatives have left the platform. Can we deal with the in-house matters? The minutes of the 31st of August 2022, we have received documentation, I think, by last week Friday, if I'm not mistaken. On the first page, can we check the spellings? Oh, on the second page, while we're still checking that, there's an apology, my apology, honorable members, there was an apology that I received, that of Honorable Nwita. I did not register it for record purposes. The next page, still on the attendees, and apologies. Starting of the discussions. Okay, the next page. 2.2 National Treasury, 2.3 were deliberated on the presentation by National Treasurer. Next page. Still on deliberations by both the departments. The next page. Still deliberations. There you go. Next page. And three, consideration of the draft minutes. Can I get a mover for the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of the discussion on the set page?
While Njadu is thinking of moving, I'll move.
And then I will second.
Thank you, Honorable Karim, for moving, and Honorable Njadu for seconding. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. I see a hand of Honorable Fanny Ditoit.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just something to add and something to maybe consider with regards to the times of the meetings. As you well know, we had a whippery meeting this morning as well as 2 weeks back, and the times are conflicting. I mean, if we can start the meetings at 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock, that would be appreciated, because both me and the Honorable Njadu are disadvantaged when we are not able to focus on the meeting at hand and have to do two meetings at a time. Just for consideration, please. Thank you, Chair.
That's noted, Honorable Tutorait. We will try to negotiate that they allocate us 10 o'clock so that we can accommodate everybody to participate. I think the people who are affected by that meeting is yourself, Honorable Njadu, and Honorable Mamara Khan. Honorable Karim?
Yeah, for other reasons too. The advice to meeting at 10 is that you can attend to your emails, Chairperson. You know, you get floods of emails and WhatsApps. WhatsApps have become the new emails. It takes a lot of time, really. One can get at least that out of the way. So the other advantage is actually that, you know, previously we started at 10, you'll recall, on the SCOF side because of transport issues on a Tuesday, remember? People are flying in from Joburg and wherever. And secondly, we thought it's 10 o'clock on a Tuesday, why don't I get 10 o'clock on a Wednesday? What I discovered was, because I used to fly in on a Monday night, was you get a lot of work done in the morning because your mind is more alert. So, of course, that doesn't include DA people. I'm talking of us ANC people, you know. Thank you.
Honorable Raida.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I thought the MPs all slept until 11 o'clock. Isn't that the law?
To rule him out of office. Close him down. Cut the mic off.
No, continue, Madam Reda.
Yeah, no, I'd just like to add my voice to the request, because the reality is that, you know, if one is able to travel early in the morning through to Parliament and get stuck in there, it just makes it a lot easier. And makes for the flow of the day to work better. So, yes, I would agree to adding my voice to that request.
Okay, thank you. I think we agree that we will forward the request to the authority relevant to grant us a slot so that we start at 10 o'clock, because it's also difficult for me as well, and everyone, if you are to travel to Parliament or to do other things to get prepared, it's very difficult. We will make that request, and hopefully we will be granted that 10 o'clock. I understand your frustration, and I share the same sentiment. Honorable Chair. Detroit, do you want to come back?
Chair.
I see.
I'm
Honorable
just thanking
Detroit.
You. I'm clapping hands, Chair.
High five. Honorable Lenjatu.
Yes, Chairperson. I think the 10 o'clock, I did also notice it in the morning that all the other committees this morning, they are starting at 10. So this, I think it will not be a problem that to be granted. It was only us who started at 9, yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Programming Whip. Thank you. Lubabalo, you wanted to say something before I close?
Hello, Chair.
Yes, sir.
Yes. In fact, Chairperson, I wanted to bring exactly the same issue to the attention of the committee because I was speaking with the Honorable Dutoit behind the scenes about the same matter. So when I was raising my hand, I wanted to put it on the table for exactly what has happened, that the committee deliberate on it, and then will affect the resolution of the committee. Because I don't think there will be any challenges. Like Honorable Njatu has just indicated, most of the committees are starting at 10 o'clock. And I think what makes it easy is that through these virtual meetings, there's a lot of flexibility that is allocated in terms of starting time. But when we're back in Parliament, we're given like strict guidelines to say, for example, we must start at 10 o'clock. And then when COVID started, then we're told that we must start between 9 and 12. But all of a sudden, now as time went on, then committees started to shift from 9 to 10 because some members, like, they would like to deal with some household issues before starting the meeting. So I'm trying to say, Chair, I doubt if there will be any objection to the resolution of the committee.
Chairperson, can Lubabalo explain why, when I raised this over 2 years ago, starting at 10, as we indeed did do in SECOF, he didn't say all these things. So he owes me a letter of apology. Secondly, don't allow me to speak, Chairperson. Secondly, we didn't ask for any permission, Chairperson. We just went ahead. The skies did not fall down. Nobody cares as long as we deliver the bills and the MTBPS and the appropriations work. No one really cares. Thirdly, as you recall, Chairperson, in SCOF, we put it to the committee in July or June 2014, and everybody agrees. So really, I don't know whose permission you're going to seek, because now that's sucking up to the leadership there, Comrade Dickledy. Maybe you're standing for the NEC and you're worried today.
Agreed. No permission needed. That's the schedule.
We have the programming whip here who is
Chairperson, can I put a point of order? Why did Mr. Injazu, Comrade Injazu, do this 2 years ago, right? So he's failing in his job to appropriation. When Fidesz said we're meeting at 10, everybody said, yeah, we did it. The very same people are in the same committee.
We agreed.
Can you speak behind the screen of the meeting, please? can you please take your discussions of the platform? Honorable members, I think we have resolved, and I don't foresee any problem in terms of implementing that going forward, with the explanation also coming from the Secretariat. Thank you very much, honorable members. Take care. See you tomorrow in plenary. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Karim, I'm giving you a call right now on something else.
Thank you.